This is a continuation of the May 16th, 2023 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves petition number 514 for property ID 104605002. The property is owned by Covington Townhome Properties, LLC. Board members present by video conference are Lisa Bodner, John Rose, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. There is no one present at the assessor's office, but we do have Greg LeBlanc and Dan Politica present as representatives for the appellant. If there's going to be any confidential testimony, please let me know, and then we will start a separate recording. I know you folks have already been sworn in, but we'll go ahead and have you swear in for this case. So whoever would like to speak, please go ahead and raise your right hand and be sworn in.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you gave in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
I do.
Dan? Did I hear an I do?
I do. I won't be presenting or anything in this hearing either.
Okay. Good. All right. Go ahead and tell us about what... I won't give you the speech again about the assessor presumption of correctness, so go ahead and tell us about this property.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and share my screen again, so... I'll have to wait for it to pull up. You can let me know when it's up and you can see something.
Did you click Zoom before? Does that help it come in or not?
I think it's just a slow to load. I just look at the packet that you provide us.
Just start talking, and presumably the screen will activate. So these are 29 townhomes located in the, I guess I would say, the Orchards area. They were built in 2007. They're currently assessed for a gross value of $9,291,000. And we're seeking a reduction down to $8,546,425. If you look on page P12, you can see generally where the townhomes are located. That is 205. That's running through the highway across north-south across the picture. You can see kind of SR502 at the bottom. So that is generally where these townhomes are located. The bottom picture is the aerial. It's just a, you know, you can see that they're essentially single loaded into a cul-de-sac at the end. So they're essentially duplex type units. We've supported our value by the income approach. These townhomes have always been leased. The difference in our assessment and the assessor's valuation is that the assessor is valuing these as a fee simple townhome that could be essentially sold as a condominium or fee simple townhome. These have only been ever leased. They currently sit on one parcel. Per the assessor, they are all partitioned up into separate lots. However, they are all sit on one single parcel. Currently, that's parcel 104605002. If you look on page P1-3, you can see our income approach. And again, these are all three bedroom, two and a half bath units with a single car garage. They were 96% leased, 97% leased as of the valuation date. at the time of the evaluation date, their in-place rent was $1,566 per unit, and their asking rent was just under $1,600 per unit. We looked at the market and recent leasing at the property and concluded that the market rent is closer to $1,800 per unit. So that's where we've set the rents. If you look on page P1-3 under 2022 pro forma, you can see our projections for the income approach. So we have expense reimbursements and various fees for pet revenue and miscellaneous income added. And we've projected a 5% vacancy collection loss factor, and expenses before taxes at 23.7% of effective gross income. We've get an NOI of $473,207 before tax. And from that, we load the cap rate. We've used 4.5% as a base cap rate plus 1.04% for the tax load. So at a loaded tax or loaded cap rate of 5.54%, we get a direct cap value of $8,546,425, which is about $294,704 per unit. On page P1-4, we have 4 years of actual operating history of income and expenses. Here we see that the revenue has ranged from $546,000 up to $603,000 in 2021. That revenue was down to $574,000. So we're projecting an effective gross income of $620,000. Again, that's higher than any of the years they've been previously. We have expenses. We're projecting expenses at about $5,000. Per unit. Last year, those expenses were at $449.68. So the expenses, as you see, they generally keep increasing. There's no surprise there. We're seeing utilities go up. You're seeing insurance costs go up. You know, the cost for repair and maintenance, materials, and just the cost of getting somebody over there to do work, those are all increasing. There's no reason to expect that that these expenses aren't going to continue to increase. So our projected NOI is $473,207. So from that, we get a per unit value of $294,704 per unit. We've supported it with other sales of townhomes. This is located on page P1-5. Here we have the sales occurred between June 2020 and September 2021. So we're all post-COVID sales or post since the start of the pandemic, at least. Sales one and two, these sales, I should say, these occurred at the same time, but they are separate properties and separate locations. Both of these sales represent are the most recent, but they also represent the upper end of the range at $348,000 per unit and $335,000 per unit. Sale one is three bedroom, three bath townhomes, and sale two consists of four bedroom, three bath townhomes. They were built in 2020, so that is the main differentiator between those sales and our subject, which we are built in 2007. Then we've supported those with some other sales. We've got sale three. That's at the low end of the range. That's 220 per unit. It's an older development built in 1995. It also has some smaller units consisting of one bedroom, one bath, two bedroom, one bath, and two bedroom, two baths, in addition to three bedroom, two bath townhomes. So that's why it's setting the lower end of the range. Sales four and five are at 300,000 per unit, more or less. However, again, these are newer properties built in 2018 and 2019. One thing I wanted to point out is that we have cap rates on four of these sales. The reported cap rates for sales one and two were 4.89%. For sale four, they were at 5.1%. In sale five, it was at 5.3%. We're projecting a base cap rate of 4.5%. I think that, generally we saw decreasing cap rates all the way up to the beginning of 2022. So I think a lower cap rate is called for in this case. But again, our cap rate that we've projected is lower than any of these sales indicated here, which are similar townhome sales here. And in support, we have, you can see where the subject is in relation to the sales. I don't know that any of these areas are outright better or worse than the subject's location. Maybe sale three has a little better location, close to the Vancouver Mall and the highway access, but. To each their own. And in support, we've also included information from CoStar on the sales that I included. Exhibit 2 is the January 1, 2022 rent roll. Exhibit 3 is the P&L reports from 2019, 20, and 21. And Exhibit 4 is the assessor's valuation notice. But on the whole, I believe that the assessor's approach is to value these as fee simple individual units. However, these are all currently one tax lot. They've all been rented throughout the life of the property, and if they were going to be sold, they would either be sold in bulk, like the sales that we presented here on page P1-5, or if they were sold off on a fee simple basis, there would be holding costs associated with that, which you would have to deduct to get down to that bulk value. But it would take time to sell these, and there would presumably be time to have the units turn over and be available to be sold. And there would also be costs to renovate the units to get them ready for a fee simple type individual sale. These costs are not being considered by the assessor And that's the reason why we believe that a lower assessment is warranted in this case.
Greg, do any of these have any amenities like a clubhouse or, you know, pool or anything like that, including the subject or a workout room or any of that sort of thing?
No, it's my understanding that, well, the subject certainly doesn't. The units themselves, they have, you know, washer dryers and garage, but there are no common area amenities for this property or any of the comparable sales.
So now, are you local? Are you in Vancouver or are you?
Yes, our office is in Vancouver, and I'm sitting right off Mill Plain as we speak.
I just wondered how you think the location on 73rd Circle compares to Falk Road or Nicholson Road, which I know are, I wouldn't call them an upscale neighborhood by any stretch of the imagination.
So you're talking about sales two.
Two and five.
Five. Okay. Yeah, I guess they're, you know, a little older.
And the neighborhood's a little bit different, correct? I mean,
yeah, I would.
The Minnehaha, I think, and the Van Mall definitely are better. And 60th Street, isn't that kind of in the Minnehaha area too?
Which is that?
That's Comp 4. That's Comp 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks to be. If you look on the map on page 6,
yeah,
that's where they're located. Okay. And yeah, if you were, correct me if I'm wrong, were you a former residential realtor?
No, I'm just a native of Vancouver.
Okay. Because I would say, if you were a residential realtor, I would defer to your knowledge.
I'm just a very long-time resident, and I, you know, have bought and sold and loaned on properties all over Clark County, and I'm just familiar with these neighborhoods, so. That was my question.
Yeah, and then, I mean, being a townhome product, you're kind of straddling between like the concerns of a homeowner and an apartment renter. You know, sometimes apartment renters are not quite as concerned as the school district, and you know, sometimes you know someone that has a townhome, you know, can't quite afford to get into a house, but. They have children and a family, and they want their best for the children.
Right.
So a school district is important to them.
Okay. I don't have any other questions.
I have a question. Your units are all individual duplexes, right?
Well, each townhome is, I think, on their separate. I think it's a partitioned lot, but the buildings itself are duplexes.
I mean, it's not like four units that are all with a common wall. It's two units. It's like a duplex. It's a series of duplexes, right?
Yes.
And they could be partitioned. You're saying that the lots could be partitioned if you did a line. Lot line adjustment?
Yes, they could be partitioned.
And each one of the units is individually metered for all utilities?
I believe so. I don't know about water, sewer. Sometimes but I would have to think that they are. Metered for water, sewer, and I'm sure they have their own natural gas meters and electrical.
And the comparables you have, are they?
They're all similar. They're all townhomes. The only exception may be comparable three, which has some townhomes, and it also has some smaller, you know, one and two bedroom units.
I'm looking at, let's say, for comparable four. I can't tell there, but it looks to me like they're all connected.
Yeah.
So that's like a fourplex or a fiveplex, and all connected together, as opposed to a duplex. I mean, comparable five looks like a duplex, and then so does number three. Number two, I can't tell. I mean, I've seen some of these that are like, you know, four units together or six units together, but yours are clearly all duplexes together. I mean, duplexes and then separately, they could be separated. Okay, did you have a chance to look at the assessor's comparables?
You know, I looked at them, but again, they're saying, well, here's a sale of a townhome that's, you know, always, you know, on a fee simple individual unit. So that's, I mean, I really haven't considered it. I don't think a buyer, if this property came on the market, would be willing to pay a full retail price for all 29 units.
Yeah, no, I understand your carrying costs and the cost to dispose of them would be a reduction of the sale price in these cases, so. All right. I think I have it.
Yeah, I don't have any other questions.
No, I have no questions. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. We'll close the hearing.
This is a continuation of the May 16th, 2023 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves petition number 770 for property ID 92008204. Property is owned by Todd E. McCloskey, Jr. and Veronica McCloskey, and it's under trustees. Board members present by video conference are Lisa Bodner, John Rose, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. There is no one present for the assessor's office, but we do have Dan Politica present as the representative for the appellant. We don't have video feed for you, which is okay, but do still go ahead and raise your right hand to be sworn in.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. I will give you the speech. We're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2022. Keep in mind the assessor has the presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from the board as the outcome, and you have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. So go ahead and tell us about the McCloskey property.
Sure. I submitted a summary of our recommended value, which changed slightly from what we originally submitted on the appeal form. And this is a residential property, located on the Columbia River. And it's we appealed this property last year and had a hearing around this time. And it was last year that we had them get some bids for some deferred maintenance that was submitted as evidence last year. And the bids, which are in my evidence packet, have, you know, some dates on there that are just after the assessment date. And so they're still applicable to our, you know, requested value for this year. And it's essentially the same argument that we had put forth, which with some minor updates, you know, there was some new sales that occurred after, you know, that are applicable to this assessment date, 1/1/22. And that's kind of how I came up with my original value, and then I just deducted the cost to cure for the deferred maintenance and the roof repair and the replacement of the exterior. So you can see on page P1-2, a simple sales grid. My background, I worked as a residential appraiser for Salt Lake County in Utah. And then I in the commercial department as well for a few years. And then I moved up to Idaho and worked for the Bonner County residential assessor until I joined up with Tax Advisors now. And so, you know, my grid, my sales grid, I'm by no means an expert in the residential market. It more just uses conservative round adjustments to just account for the differences between subject property and the sales. And I use the assessor's website and the data on their website, you know, for construction quality and size and year built and everything to just come up with what, you know, I felt was a reasonable sales price or market value for the subject, which is close to what the assessed value is. So I, you know, did $2.1 million, and I deducted the bids amount that are in this packet to come up with $1,837,140. And so page P1-3 is just a map of the sales, all of them along the Columbia River. In deciding, you know, I felt that my comparable sale number one was the best sale, the least amount of adjustment, the closest to the lien date. And so in deciding, you know, my price per square foot or my value, I kind of leaned more on that one. But you can see, I mean, I just included, you know, the last year, the facts and findings of our hearing and the decision, and then in my exhibits, you know, I'm sure as you can see when you go through them, it all equals out to my deduction. And so at the time when I spoke with the owner, when the assessment came out last year, you know, they still had not completed any. And so, you know, we think that's kind of where the error in the assessment comes, is that the assessor isn't accounting, you know, in their sales and how they're coming up with the value, they're not accounting for deferred maintenance and you know, the expenses that a buyer would look at. And so that's how, you know, our recommended value is concluded, and that's kind of, you know, I won't go through each bid, but that's just kind of where and how we came up with our value, and that's where we asked the board to make the adjustment and bring the assessment down to our recommended value of $1,837,140. Is there any questions on this?
I don't have any.
No, I have no questions.
No, I don't have any questions.
Okay. Well, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Look forward to hearing the decision. Thanks.
Thanks. Close the hearing.
This is the May 16th, 2023 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves two properties. The first is case number 771 for property ID 126455000. The second is case 772 for property ID 986056494. Both properties are owned by the Vic Building Owner LLC. Just in case anybody has confidential testimony today, please state when you're going to do that, and we will start a separate recording. Board members present by video conference are Lisa Bodner, John Rose, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We do have Lonnie Dawkins present as the representative for the assessor's office. We have Justin Soth also present for the assessor's office as a spectator. For the appellant, we have Greg LeBlanc present as the representative for the appellant. And then we also have Dan Politica present for the representative as well. And then go ahead and raise your right hand for those of you that are going to be speaking.
Do you swear or affirm testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
Yes.
I do.
Thank you. Just to let you know, we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2022. Keep in mind the assessor has the presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this board as the outcome. And you have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. So unless you have questions, I'm going to ask the appellant to go ahead and give their presentation and tell us about your property.
Okay, I'm going to attempt to share my screen here if that's okay.
Fine with us.
Okay. Okay, so everybody see there should be an aerial of the Vancouver Innovation Center?
Nope. My screen's just black.
Black screen.
Is this part of the packet that you sent us? If you have the pages numbered, we can just look at our packet, too.
Because it says I'm sharing my screen.
There you go.
There was something that went away.
I stopped it. Let's try it again. Maybe it takes a while for... Is it black again?
Still black.
Yep.
I mean, I probably because I stopped and started again.
You might try zooming in or out. See if maybe that'll get it to load. It looks like it's trying to. There you go. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, great. All right. So this is the Vancouver Innovation Center. It's the former HP campus. And you can see how it's laid out. You know, obviously it was built for HP's use. And when they left the building, they started to lease the space out kind of as a kind of small business incubator type space. And the current owner has purchased and they're more focused on leasing to more traditional office industrial and flex users. So the building consists of about 685,000.
I should tell you real quickly that my screen is black again. Well, okay. You're putting something different up. Okay.
Okay. It's about 685,000 square feet. It has a number of tenants, pages 2 and 3, contain, the rent roll. As of January 1st, 2022, the development was about 65% leased and occupied. The building consists of about 145,000 square feet of office space, 104,000 plus of small flex space, 197,000 of large flex space and close to 240,000 of traditional industrial space. And what we've done is for our valuation, we've prepared a income approach, and that income approach is on page P1-4. And here we see that we've projected the rents, which are more in line with what they've been getting for leasing. This is just over the last 18 months, more or less. They've had some existing tenants, but this is more or less what they're getting. We've got some utility expense reimbursements, and we're projecting a vacancy of 15%, and with expenses at about 54%, we're getting a projected NOI of $3.984 million, almost $4 million, and we're capitalizing that at a 7.25% cap rate. Adding the tax load of 1.02% at, so a total of 8.25% for the cap, we're getting a stabilized value of $48,182,000. From this, we have to deduct up costs to bring it up to that stabilized occupancy, since we're at, currently at 65%. So we're deducting almost $6 million for lease-up costs, and another $7 million for remaining capital expenses, for a total of $12.9 million in deduction, and that gives us a value of $35,198,000. You can see on page P1-5 is our actual income and expenses for 2020. In 2021, in our projected revenue. So we can see for 2020 and 2021, there was, reduced rent and higher expenses to get the space ready for tenants. The NOI was hovering just below $1 million at $886,000 for our stabilized projection. We're projecting it much higher, closer to $3.8 million. We also included the budget to the right hand column, so that blue column is based on our projection utilized for the income approach. And if we look on page P1-6, we have the lease-up costs. Here we're projecting more or less an 18-month time frame to get up to stabilized occupancy. So we have rent loss and loss of reimbursement income, and we're projecting TIs at $25 a square foot. So that over that period, that gives us $5 million plus leasing commissions and 10% profit risk for holding costs. So that brings us up to that $5.979 million value for the deduction of lease-up costs. And then we have a deferred maintenance budget that is included here on page P1-7, and that's the $7 million. So we have the various items. There's a substantial HVAC work that needs to be done. We have to spruce up the common areas. There's lighting updates, updating the electrical, of course, roof repairs, and updating finishing the parking lot and sidewalks, and modernizing the elevators, and various miscellaneous items. So that's the $7 million deduction there. Here's a copy copy of the rent rolls are attached on page P1, 8 and 9, all the way to 12. And here's the P&Ls are included. And here's a tax affidavit from the purchase and the land. So is any questions regarding this analysis?
This land that you purchased, where is this the land that the building sits on? Or additional land?
Well, the land is surrounding the property. You can't really see it from this page on P1. But it's surrounding parcel the outside of the Vancouver Innovation Center. So it's a land outside of the blue line.
So the blue line area, it has a land value of $13,390,000, and then the land outside that was purchased separately has a value. It's valued by the assessor at $11,793,000. Am I correct?
I think that's the. I don't. So the assessed value on.
That's correct, Dan.
Okay, thanks.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I thought the assessed value of the land on the VIC was $12,172,800.
That is just where the buildings are located. The other parcel is the surrounding it to the north, east, and west, and that's at the $11 million and some change. We really should be hearing them separately. I should have spoke up. They're two separate parcels.
Yeah, the assessed value, the one you quoted at $12,172,000, that was last year. I mean, that was 21's value. The 22 value is $13,390,000.
Okay.
Value. That's correct.
Yeah. Okay, and then the other piece is the bare land outside the building. Okay, got it. Outside the building property. Okay. I have a few questions on the property. You're saying that the leased up value under the income approach would be $48 million if you had everything done and leased up and going and running. You say it would be $48 million, and the lease up costs are the costs to do what other than the commissions? What else is in there?
That's the cost to bring new tenants in. So the lease up costs are going to be, you're going to have tenant improvement costs. Presumably you're going to give new tenants a TI allowance. You're going to have rent loss because you don't have a tenant in there. So we're projecting 18 months of rent loss. And also you have costs, you're missing out on reimbursement income since you're not getting rent, you're not getting reimbursed for your expenses. Then you have, leasing commissions that you're going to have to pay to brokers as well.
And didn't I hear you say that you have a vacancy factor in your basic model?
Yeah. If you look at page P1-4, you can see the vacancy credit loss kind of in the middle there at 15%.
Mm-hmm. It's underneath potential gross income. It shows that percentage.
Okay. So there's not a duplication of effort there between that loss and the rent up costs.
No, this is the cost, the lease up costs are the cost to bring the occupancy from the current 63% up to 85%.
And the CapEx does not include tenant improvements. That's just to repair the building to get it up to a stabilized structure.
Yes, that's what the lease up costs, and the CapEx costs are in addition, because that's things like, you know, the roofs, the elevators, the electrical, the HVAC. These are, you know, things that a tenant would not be expected to incur these types of costs.
Is the building chopped up in such a way that you don't have to put in additional walls, or is that part of the CapEx?
Well,
I mean, this is a building that you're retrofitting from what HP did to put actually smaller tenants in there, as opposed to a very large tenant that's taken up the whole structure. So what's the difference between actually chopping up the building into some segments versus tenant improvement?
Well, the building is demised out into tenant spaces currently. However, I assume that they have some latitude there as to if they want to make spaces larger or smaller, if they get a particular tenant in that, you know, is willing to take more space for a longer term, I'm sure they would try to make that work if it was in an area where they could combine spaces. So, you know, that's, you know, it's part of the challenges of this building, because it was built for a single tenant use, and here we have now several multi-tenant use here. So it's not cut and dry as to how the space is demised.
I guess my question is, does that $7 million include part of that chopping it up, or does that just to get the building back into shape? And then the other things for changing the space configuration would be in the tenant improvement.
I think that would be in the tenant improvements. If we look into what we have on page P1-7 for the deferred maintenance budget, you know, that's demised out to HVAC control and lighting and power, roof repairs, elevator upgrades.
Okay. I think I got it. I have no more questions. Lisa and John?
I don't have any other questions.
No questions right now.
Okay, and you just strictly did a income approach to this. Okay.
That's correct, and that's on page P14.
Got it. Okay. So, Lonnie, tell us about what the assessor is.
Well, very good. And, John, I haven't met you. Welcome to Board of Equalization.
Thank you.
This is a difficult property. I find myself saying that regularly, but it's got quite a history. Is everybody familiar with its location?
Yes. Yeah.
It's nice having local people who understand the properties. So, as you know, as Greg alluded to, that HP built it for their specific purposes. So that in and of itself creates some problems for the next user, because not everybody has the same needs. So Greg has pointed out that they've had to invest extensive amount of capital to bring it up to what they need it for. So the buyer is from New York, and this property, I've been at Clark County for 18 years now, and so it's fun now that I've got a little history. So one of the first years I was here, this property was under appeal when HP owned it. So I was able to tour it back then. And you know, they were downsizing, using very limited space there. You know, it's such a huge property, almost 700,000 square feet. Anyway, we toured the property and just noticed there's a lot of functional obsolescence. And, you know, you guys are aware, been around long enough, that functional obsolescence is specific to a property. So it's got some, you know, problems. When you look at a property, is it brand new? If I built it for my use, then 99% of the time it's perfect for what I need. And then the next user, it's like, okay, I don't need this, I don't need that, and it's got some design problems. So that's what this property is strapped with. So I remember back when HP owned it, we lowered the value because of functional obsolescence. And then SEH bought it in right after the Great Recession. In fact, it was in the middle of the Great Recession. And they paid $55 million for both parcels, the building complex that we've been discussing, the 62 acres, in addition to all the other land around it, which is a hair under 100 acres. So SEH bought it for $55 million. And I, as part of my report, have you guys had a chance to review my report a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
So I kind of describe a little bit of the history of the property. So when SEH bought it, they plan on just holding it for future investment, and maybe there's so much unique land. So it's funny with this property in the city of Vancouver. If you look on Google Earth, this is very unique property. It's a huge piece of bare land that has opportunities. And I'll be honest with you, it's so exciting to see this company buy this property because they've got, as you've seen in both of our proposals, they have some grand visions for this property. They're going to turn all the bare land around it into mixed use. It's going to be, well, I think, is it 1,600, Greg, residential development units? I think it's like 1,600, which is very dense apartments. And then they're going to have flex buildings. They're going to have new industrial buildings all around this property. So in terms of the land valuation, you have my report, and I don't need to go into detail. And when I talk about land, since we're talking about both appeals at once, I'll jump to the land around it. And that's on page R3 and R4 of my report on the land, if you guys want to jump to that. It's a little confusing kind of having two at once, but R3 on the bare land parcel.
If you look at R33 on the building parcel, you also get a view of what the two different properties are.
Oh, the map. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, it's good to look at the map. I was just going to get into the detail of the valuation of the bare land.
Got it. Go ahead.
And I'll be honest with you guys. So, in appraisal, you know, some valuations I feel strongly about. It's like, I know exactly what this is worth, you know, because of the complexity of the property and the data available. And I will tell you, the land on this property is at market or below, without question. The building is another question. Because of all of the functional obsolescence with the building, it's a challenge. And in my report, it shows how much capital expenditure the buyer was planning on spending on this property. And that's $20 million of what they're kind of tentatively planning on spending. And so in terms of the building, that's a complicated property because they have to spend so much money on improving it. In the assessment, let's jump back to the land around it. I'm sorry to be jumping around, but The land around it is valued at $2.82 a square foot on a gross basis. And almost all of this land is usable. There's no sensitive wetlands. It's, as you guys know, it's pasture. I think there were cows out there just a number of years ago. But they are designating some of the property in the northeast corner that's treed. They're designating that as kind of a conservation. So they're going to use that for walking paths, and they're going to keep the trees, and it's going to be a nice little nature area. So if we look at just the net usable, that's 82.404 acres. We're valuing that at $3.30 a square feet. And I will tell you without question, that is a reasonable value, if not low. And on top of that, the buyers have spent, they haven't disclosed how much money, but in soft costs, in planning, attorneys, all of the engineering for the roads that they're going to put in, it's going to be extensive. And it's, they, if I was to speculate, they have hundreds of thousands, if not more, into soft costs in planning this extensive multi-use development. That doesn't mean there's not a lot of capital expenditures that they're going to have to put into this property. And you know, we'll address that in the assessment as they add these improvements. But there, I have included some land sales that show, you know, that our assessment is reasonable. And I'll tell you, this land is special because it's tucked in between 164th Avenue, 192nd Avenue, and which are super desirable commercial and residential areas. So let's just jump to the buildings.
Let me stop you for a second while you're on the land. Is there any questions to whether it was an arm's length transaction or basically a market transaction when they bought it? They bought it in November 30th of 21. So is there any question about the valuation they paid for it when they bought it?
Boy, Dan, that is a great question. And to be honest with you, I have not talked to the sellers. And this is very complicated because they've closed at different times, but all of this is negotiated beforehand. And as you see in my report, that they actually, SEH, as part of this process, sold off the 20 acres to the school district, as you saw in my report. They all closed about the same time. So all of this was pre-negotiated. Are you guys familiar with the school district property that's in my report that's sold?
Yes.
Lisa, did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
The 20 acres. Yeah, so that's up in the northwest corner of this property. It was all sold at the same time. So I don't have any insider information. So to answer your question, this property was on the market for a long time at a much higher price than what they sold at. So I am confident that it was a fair market transaction. I think that this is just my own personal view that they got a good price, but this property is so difficult because of all of this 700,000 square feet of difficult buildings that a buyer would have to address. If we were just looking at the land, I think they probably could have done way better if they just spun off the land and then sold the building separately. That's just my view, because of its location and the desire for residential, multifamily, flex buildings. So,
okay, go ahead. Go back to the building. Go ahead.
So, in my report, we relied on the income approach, both the income approach and the sale of the property. Because of the complexity of this property, I relied heavily on the sale of the property. $35 million was allocated to the sale. If we want to turn to page R8, that's kind of the history of the sale of the property. Just let me know when you guys are there.
I've got it.
Okay.
So it's hopefully I can explain this spreadsheet. So there's four different columns. If we start from the right, that's the SEH purchase in 2009, which is right in the midst of the Great Recession, at $55 million. And so, you know, I don't know, you guys remember that time. People were desperate. It was a rough time. So $55 million, I think, was a price that was very low because of the conditions of the market. So that's just, that's one sale of the property, and that's both properties. That's all of the land and the building complexes. So if you go to the next column over, the taxpayer estimate of value, they have $35 million on the building and then $10.4 million on the land, which is a total of $45,400,000, which, as you can see, that is substantially lower than the 2009 sale price. The assessed value on the next column, I have $42,892,000 on the building complex, $11,793,000 on the additional land, and then $5.7 million on the school district land that was purchased out of that, for a total of $60,427,000. So if we look at the sale of the property in the next column over, the building complex was allocated $35 million. And in my report, the buyer was reported to estimate a $20 million investment in the building after the purchase. So that would be a total of $55 million invested to get it up to a standard, as Greg described, that they could lease it to multi-tenants, which, Dan, you had a great point, is that it's super expensive to put these new walls in, and the new utilities, and all of the things that are required for the tenant improvements. And that's what some of this number represents, and the deferred maintenance that Greg indicated. And then the $10,400,000 was allocated to the sale of the land around it. And then the 20 acres that was sold to the school district was $10,475,000, for a total of $75,875,000. So I'll tell you that Greg has been extremely busy in Oregon appeals. We've been trying to get together since November, and we haven't been able to. Because what I needed from him at that point was, how much capital has the buyer invested since purchase? Because I know it was reported that he was going to invest $20 million. I didn't know how much he'd invested up until July 31st of 22, you know, when we were to value it. So I put in here $20 million, but obviously that hasn't happened. It appears it was $13 million because Greg indicated that it was a $7 million and I just got this report, you know, a month ago, so, and haven't talked to Greg about it, but it appears that it was $7 million left of that $20 million to invest. So I assume it's a $13 million that's already been invested, but I don't know that as fact. So so I think in summary, in terms of the sales approach, because of the complexity of this property, the way I look at it is that, you know, as you asked, Dan, if we assume that $35 million is a fair market transaction, and I think it was for a functional and deferred maintenance building, I believe it to be accurate, then we just have to figure out how much has the buyer invested from that point to the lien date, which is July 31st, 2020. And so what's happened is, when they bought the property, it was 40 to 45% leased. Well, now it's 65% leased as of the lien date. So they've attracted between 15 and 20% new tenants to the building. And as Greg indicated, it's about $25 a square foot in tenant improvements to get this building up to snuff. So if we assume $35 million is a market transaction, we need to show that, hey, they've spent some money on this building, upwards of maybe $13 million, $25 a square foot for tenant improvements, which is, I estimated, about a little under $5 million in just tenant improvements. Then they had to do roof work and just a lot of CapEx to get it up to speed. So in terms of my income approach, that's on R9. You want to turn there? I didn't have the breakdown, because we couldn't get together and the building, this property is in flux. I mean, the buyer's investing capital in changing it as we go. So there's, it's difficult to keep track of just because it's a lot of moving pieces. But so I used a blended rent on the property, and I used the 75 cents a square foot. And that's a blended rate between the industrial, the flex, and the office. And it's because I didn't have a real good breakdown of all the property types. And so Greg has used it closer to a full service rent, which in full service rent, they're covering utilities. They're covering almost all expenses. And I've used a modified gross. So I am showing a 20% expenses at the bottom, and that does not include taxes. So if we included taxes in that, if we weren't talking about property, an ad valorem property tax appeal, that expense would be upwards of 32%, which is a more normalized number. Greg's expenses, in my opinion, he's using 56% expenses plus property taxes. So if we add property taxes to that, he's looking at a 65 to 67% expenses, which that's really not a market expense number. That's a teardown number for the building. I think that's too high. And I think that's the difference between our reports is our expense ratios. And so my number is 75 cents a square foot blended rent, a 40% vacancy. So that mimics what was representative at the lien date because they had 60% occupancy. So that's what I mimicked. And fortunately, our cap rates are not that far off. Mine's actually higher than Greg's. It's 7.75. He's using 7.25. So we're very close, which it's not often the tax rep has a lower cap rate than us, so we don't have to discuss that. That's kind of nice. But I realize the risk in this building. The thing about buildings like this that are multi-use is that the beauty of it is that you have some, once it gets fully occupied and they get some of these problems cured, you have, what is it, like 100 different tenants? So, if one tenant left, you still have 99 tenants there. So you have some, a little bit of less risk with, tenants leaving because you have, it's not like a one tenant building that they leave and you got zero income. So that's an advantage to this property. But in summary, my income approach shows $42.8 million, which is $7.8 million over what they paid for it. So my belief is that $35 million is a market transaction, and they've added value of $7.8 million based on their tenant recruitments, their deferred maintenance improvements. Although they're not done, they've invested an extensive amount of capital in it to date. So I think $42.8 million is a good value, and $1 per square foot, it's certainly about as low as you can get out there. And just in summary, the industrial market is as strong as it's ever been in my 32-year history. We see in Clark County, they've added like 2.5 million square feet of warehouse, and they're, in fact, the city of Vancouver put a moratorium on warehouses because there's too many of them going up. I think they've lifted it since, but. That industrial market cap rates on the Class A stuff is 5 to 6%, and the office market, surprisingly with COVID in Vancouver, is as strong as it's been in 20 years, because people in the dense CBC Portland market, they're going to the suburbs, which includes Beaverton, which includes Wilsonville, which includes Clark County. And so our office market is surprisingly strong. We see new office popping up, and they're expensive to build. They're super expensive to build. So in my report, the buyer says they are planning on raising rents, and it'll happen as this property improves. So I'm confident in our values, and I hope you uphold it. Thank you. And any questions?
I don't have any questions.
What are you, where is your allowance for what the appellant is calling case up costs and the capex to get it there?
Yeah, so my model shows a 40% vacancy. So my model shows they don't even have to do anything. They could just leave it at this level and just earn the income. Does that make sense? So if I was to include that, Dan, I would have to lower that vacancy rate. Does that make sense? It's just two ways of approaching the same problem.
Yeah, well, the only difference is that the additional vacancy rate doesn't necessarily equate to the costs of getting it there. So it's going to get rental income way into the future, where you're 4% calculating at a fixed time right now. So it's not a true comparison. So that's it.
Yeah. It's going to be fun to watch this property. Part of the fun part of my job is watching these things unfold, because it's so rare to have 96 acres of bare land that's going to become a little city. I mean, it's going to be pretty special.
Somewhere there's a picture of a circle.
Let's see.
A circle in there. Is that the planned look it's going to have? There we go. It's on your page, R31. Is that what they anticipate looking like when it's fully completed?
Yeah, totally. And I think this has actually probably been amended recently, because the city came to them and they said, hey, we need more density. So I've read that they're going to get rid of like the detached single-family residential component and just have denser multifamily. Yeah.
So it sounds like if you own your own home, you're going to be an oddball before long.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Well, it's less yard to keep up.
That's true. So do we need any comments from, or are we moving?
I'd like to make a couple of comments. As far as the capex that was spent in 2021, they spent around $3.6 million in capex. So that's well short of $20 million and $13 million, the figure that Lonnie had alluded to. So
I'm sorry, that number is how much has been spent so far? Through July 31st of
2021, they spent $3.6 million.
So how much did they spend in the first 7 months of 22?
I don't know what they spent through the first 20 months of 22, but on this property, it looks like it's around $5.2 million.
So they spent how much? $3 million in 21?
About $3.6 million.
$3.6 million, and then how much in 22? For the 7 months?
So $5.2 million.
That's about $8.8 million as opposed to the 13 that Melania is referring to.
Yeah, and they did have additional spending in there, which was part of the master plan, things like that. So, you know, there were a million plus on the master plan, the grand vision that you see in the assessor's packet on page 16. And, you know, working towards things like that, and also new entitlements on other buildings on the site. So I did not include that since they weren't, you know, they were just planning an entitlement type things. This represents the bulk of the spending, that $8.7 or $8 million on the actual building itself. And, you know, I should say that, I mean, this is a risky project. I mean, this building has sat and has been underutilized for years, and it has been on the market for a long time. And the current owner has purchased it, and they're taking on some significant risk in this PUD type concept that they're looking to build out. You know, there's I think the hard part here is this building itself and getting that fully leased. And if they can get their approvals in place for the surrounding development, I think that will go quicker and will be potentially less troublesome to get leased up. But again, this is an interesting project, being that it's, you know, built for a single tenant originally, you know, 30 plus years ago. So it takes a special type of tenant that wants to be here. Many industrial users, you know, tend to want, you know, their own building or their own half of the building. That's very simple. They can drive up, dock their trucks in the back. But, you know, this is, you know, different because it's, you know, you have a traditional industrial space, but you walk in and you have enclosed hallways. You have other people and tenants walking around. It's not typical. So to find a tenant that wants to be in that type of environment, I think maybe requires a little convincing and requires a little, lower rent as well. But with respect to this type of development, I mean, it's great that they have this grand vision to utilize the land to its fullest potential, but we're a long way away from that right now. And what we have is a 685,000 square foot former HP campus that's being re-tenanted for multi-use. You know, with the larger development around the surrounding site, they're running into headaches that, you know, are popping up that they weren't aware of. Like, they're going to have to resize a lot of the utilities so they can accommodate this type of development and this density. So, you know, there's things that they're working through at this time. And of course, the economy being what it is now, I think we have, you know, some strong demand side. However, the cost of money has gone up considerably. And I don't know how that's going to impact the, you know, the timeline on getting this built out.
Let me ask a few questions, and maybe I'm making the wrong comparisons, but the first question is on Lonnie, is yours is indicating you've got a, I don't know, close to 50% expense ratio, or is it more than that?
I think it's more than that.
That's Greg's. Did you say Greg?
Greg's, yeah.
And that doesn't include property taxes. I think it's 56%.
Yeah, I was going to say 57, yeah.
And then you add property taxes. That would put it up to 68% expenses, which is, yeah, that's when you start tearing buildings down.
Well, that's on your net net income, net of vacancies and other factors. That ratio is not in terms of gross, because it's lower on a gross basis. Is not? Am I not comparing the right thing? That you got $10 million worth of gross income, and then you've got vacancy factor and other things that drops it down to $8.6 million, and then you got 4.7 million of things, which gives you the higher ratio. But if you take it in terms of gross rentals, it's not that high a ratio, only 47% or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the utility expenses in this building are pretty significant, and you know, they're at, you know, $2.40 a square foot in 2021. We're projecting them at $2.52, with occupancy being up another, you know, 22%. So that, you know, there's, you know, just, I think some, just the building having some heavy power users, and also having a lot of enclosed common areas that you really can't get any rent for, but you have to have those climate controlled. So in relation to a typical industrial development, I think that's why we see these expenses on the higher end.
Okay, the next question I have is on a rent per square foot. Am I not maybe comparing the wrong thing? Lonnie has a 75-cent average, and yours looks to be $13 a square foot. Is that correct?
Mine is monthly, Dan. So multiply that by 12.
So yeah, I guess mine would be $1.10. So.
Okay. And I think it's
we're projecting, you know, that office rent at $16.39, and a lot of that office space is currently vacant, and it's right at the front of the property there.
And I think a lot of what we're discussing with these higher expense rates, on page R13 through 15 on my return, it's the Columbian article that the owner has some quotes in there. And as I alluded to, he said he's going to raise the rents once it gets stabilized. So once you raise those rents, Dan, those expense rates, they'll come down, because you're like you said, your effective gross and your potential gross income is going to be higher. So then those rates will be normalized. So, you know, that's in the future. That's going to happen.
Okay. I don't think I have any other questions. Anything else anybody wants to add? John, do you have any questions? Lisa?
No, I don't have any.
No.
Okay. Guess we're done with those. we'll close those hearings.